Hey, what's up, guys? That's right, Nerd Soul here. Get ready for the podcast, breaking down what happened in your week of geek. Doesn't matter if it's movies, comic books, TV shows, we're going to get right into it. So I ain't going to waste your time. Let's do this. And today we're moving everything to the side for the 25th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series. The joint was just so fresh, and I'm just going to take a little time to tell you the things that I loved about the show. Now, when the show was on, I was coming up, I would see it after school. I think it came on like right before Gargoyles or something like that, and it just really blew my mind. And I'm gonna give you my five things I loved about Batman the Animated Series. And starting with number five is the incredible rogues gallery that they portrayed on screen. Batman has tons of villains. Some are good, some aren't good. But the great thing about this show is that they were able to take even the villains that weren't really all that and somehow make them compelling. Like the way they wrote the villains, the way they toyed with Bruce Wayne's, you know, actual life and Batman as a hero, they really got under his skin and they really provided a decent threat. Like no matter the villain, even like the weaker ones, like the guy, the clock guy, I didn't really think he was all that. But he was able, the way he was written, he was able to present a serious threat, not only to Gotham, but to Bruce Wayne or Batman himself. And then, you know, you have the better villains, like one of my favorite was Clayface. Like you just have these, you have the villains great and small, also villains that were physical and villains that weren't so physical, provide a great threat and a great, you know, match for his wits and for his strength. And for me, that's what really shines. That's what really, truly shines when you're talking about villains, of course, facing against a hero that's been around for some time. So my number four is the fact that this is set sort of like a period piece. You know, you have kind of like the Art Deco sort of 1930s or 20s style kind of buildings and stuff. And it looked good on Batman, you know, like from the Batmobile to the way the buildings were built to the fashion, like everything just looked really good on Gotham. It looked really good on Batman, even Bruce Wayne himself. I just love the style of kind of that, you know, not too techy kind of feel and kind of getting down to the roots of doing a lot of, you know, detective work and, you know, kind of getting out there and looking for clues sometimes. It really gave the feel of a mix with the new and a little bit of Dick Tracy-ness, if you will. But I really enjoy, and this is for someone I do not normally like period pieces, but I think that this one, it shines for me. Batman looks good, especially just like the new coming Gotham by Gaslight. I think Batman looks good in period pieces. I don't know why. He just works there. So anyway, my number three is the way the show handled the Bat family. From, you know, Robin to Batgirl, you know, it showed that they had their idiosyncrasies, they had their little interpersonal relationships and their hiccups and even their hangups about each other. But it did show that they were a family. It showed that even though they didn't always get along, you know, they definitely had a camaraderie, they definitely had a brotherhood or a sisterhood or looked to Batman like a father, and even Batman treated them like his own. And you know, regardless of whether they were playful or not, you know, from, you know, later on, I believe they brought in Tim Drake and, you know, stuff like that. Whether they were playful or maybe too much for Bruce Wayne or Batman, he still showed a kind of a fatherly kind of like protection about them or a love about them. And they adored Bruce Wayne. They adored Batman. And it was cool to see them write these characters in such a normal life, because, you know, you have these, you know, these larger than life characters and they've been around forever, but to kind of break them down and have them have real relationships, at least for me on screen, it just worked. I had a lot of fun watching these characters relate to each other and go out and, of course, beat up people again. So that's my number three, man. Bat family really worked. I just loved how they made them work together. So before I move on, let me remind you, you can find me at blackhollywoodlive.com. That's right, the first online network for African-Americans, super dope. And you can find celebrity interviews, after shows, sports talk, geek nerd tech, the whole shebangabang at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. Now, my number two is, of course, the action. This show had a gang of fight scenes, and they shine through. I mean, whether it was hand-to-hand or some type of weapons, even when he was more on the martial arts side, or if it was just kind of like a knockdown, drag-out fist fight, you know, the scenes worked well. The way they did the action, even when they went to their moments of kind of like the crash, pow kind of moments where it was just like that one hit, it worked for me. I think the action was perfect for the time that they set it in. And, you know, just like the flips and the kicks, it just, all of the, you know, the way they storyboarded it, the way they animated and pulled it off, all the fight scenes still today work. Like, if I watch the DVDs that I have back in the day, and I mean, they still have them available, but back in the day I saw them, they were at Walmart and they had like the whole series, so I bought them. But even now when I watch them, those action sequences are still solid. Now, once again, I'm going to go back to my favorite, of course. You know, of course you had like Bam Bat, Croc, all them, but Clayface, I loved those sequences. The way Clayface would move, the way he would attack, just his attitude towards Batman was just, Clayface is crazy. And I loved how him and Batman would just kind of like engage each other. The way Batman would have to get out of these, you know, kind of like, you know, he would put the arm around him and it would like stick him to the wall or something. The way he would have to get out of that, the way he had to be like quick and the reflexes. I just really love that about this show, man. The action was always on point. But my last thing, you know, above the Rogues Gallery, above the Bat Family, above being a period piece, above the action was my number one, which is Bruce Wayne himself. The animated series, and of course, when you have an animated series, you have years and years to kind of like write someone's character and create them and kind of show them on screen. But I think that the animated series to this day has handled Bruce Wayne the best. Not Batman, but the actual man of Bruce Wayne, like how he felt, what his relationships were like, what working, you know, what running, you know, Wayne Corp was like, you know, like all of, you know, all of these things that made Bruce Wayne, Bruce Wayne. I think they spent a lot of time giving us that side, because this could have easily been just like Batman punches bad guys easily. It could have easily been that, but they spent a lot of time dealing with the man. And I think the man behind the mask is what made this show great. Now, of course, you know, there were a couple of people, like some animators, some writers that made this great, but I think their depiction of that man and Bruce Wayne, of course, made this show what it is. So, guys, holler at me. I'm gonna holler at you. Down in the comments, let me know your favorite moments, your favorite parts, your favorite things when it comes to Batman the Animated Series. Today, we're talking about the whole season of Keloid. Now, if you didn't know exactly what Keloid is, it is a web series based on a mother and a son who are coming up in a situation where they have to hide their powers. The mother is trying to show her son kind of how to use his powers, but to also keep them, you know, of course, hidden, because people knew you had powers, you'd probably be like dissected and they'd be testing you and taking blood samples and all kinds of stuff, and you'd be a guinea pig probably for the rest of your life. But we're gonna talk about the season, how I felt about it. If you've been watching it, we're gonna, you know, get into what you think too. So I'd say the most important part of this series has been the relationship between the mother and the son. You have the young boy's name is Keloid, and she's trying to raise him in a way to be able to not only recognize his power, but to control his power, and also know how important and powerful his power is. I mean, his power can be dangerous. And we see that early on, like in episode one, or I believe, yeah, episode one, not two, that his power can be very harmful to other people. The mother and son relationship is such a great dynamic in this, because you see that she is someone
who wants the best for her son, but knows that her son is not gonna get the normal life that other kids get. You know, he's gonna have to really, really dial back his powers, his strength, his speed, whatever it is. He's going to have to kind of dumb down his talents or dumb down his skills. And he's a kid that he doesn't seem to want this at all. It's interesting, you know, a lot of times we get stuff where someone's like, oh, I got these powers and I don't want them. But in this case, it does seem that he's the type of child that just kind of wants to be normal. You know, he wants to have friends. He wants to be able to, I don't know, go to the movies or something. And there's a constant back and forth between whether I should show my mom how many powers I have, because she knows the level of powers he should be at a certain age or when powers are coming. And her being like, look, I want you to have these powers because you're gonna have them. I just wanna be around to make sure that you're safe. Now, before we get on to all the other craziness that goes on this show that makes it something that I definitely recommend, I gotta remind you that you can find me at Black Hollywood Live. That's right, the first online network for African Americans is super dope. And you can check them out daily when they have, of course, celebrity interviews, after show, sports talk, geek, nerd tech, the whole shebang bang at blackhollywoodlive.com. And once you check them out right there, they have live streams every day covering all kinds of topics at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So in this story between the mother and son, they end up having a situation go on at their current place, at their apartment, where they have to leave and leave in a hurry, which brings them to New York, where the boy is trying to retrace his roots. And you see that his mother doesn't really want him to go there, because you can see in her eyes that there's nothing but hurt and pain to wherever he's going to. And the further and the faster we move to get to that destination that the boy is looking for, to reconnect with his, you know, his past, his history, to find something, find his father, find some semblance of legacy, if you will, they end up coming in contact with what they call a tracker. And a tracker, of course, are people that are looking for people just like Keloid to, of course, take him out. And we find out that the mother has been hiding way more than just what the young boy has been learning as far as his powers and his abilities. And when they leave, they find out that not only is he trying desperately to reconnect with his past, but his mother is going into a hibernation state. And that hibernation state is something that's going to kind of keep her out of the picture for who knows how long. Which leads me into the lore. Keloid is introducing us to a whole lot of lore that I just did not expect. I did not, you know, think that we were going to be getting this kind of, you know, this kind of well-rounded atmosphere when it comes to people with the powers and abilities having to hibernate, or needing triggers when they wake up, or, you know, there being trackers. And it seems like they really planned this out very well. And I have to give it to the writers, to the creator, to the directors, all those guys that really worked on this, because they created a web series that I am very interested in. Like, they built a relationship between a mother and a son that I think is quite valuable. And I think it's definitely worth you guys checking out. So of course, really quick, if you've seen Keloid, holla at me, I'm gonna holla at you. Down in the comments, let me know what you thought about Keloid. Are you still checking it out? Are you waiting for it? Because there's something else about this that I wanted to add on, and I'm interested to see if you guys are ready for it. But season one is done. Season one has been cool. I've been having a lot of fun with it. I've watched it through twice because they're short episodes. And they've got a Kickstarter, of course, for season two. Season one has been great. I've really enjoyed it. Of course, it's a web series, so there have been some technical issues, but the core story is there. You know, there's a lot to get from what they're putting down. And I think that the road to the future is gonna be bright for what they're producing. They've got a lot of story threads that they've already laid. They got the mother of a young girl that's looking for Keloid. You got the mother going into hibernation. You got his his father, you got any other siblings or any other family members he might be interested in, you got more trackers to worry about, you have this world that he's growing up in where he's gonna have to, sooner or later, be himself as well, you know, outside of what his mother has taught him. So I'm very psyched to see where they go, where they take this, and what the future may bring. So of course, guys, if you're checking this out, let me know what you think about the Kickstarter. Are you giving to the Kickstarter? Are you watching? Are you donating? All that stuff. Let me know your thoughts down below.
We are continuing our read along of Ghostbusters. And this is part of a crossover that IDW had called the X-Files Conspiracy. And man, it's interesting to see how they played this, because I was wondering whether this was going to be an X-Files, you know, comic book with, you know, a Ghostbusters skin, or if this was going to be a Ghostbusters comic book with the, you know, kind of touch of X-Files flavor. And I'll have to say, man, it seems like they really meshed this together pretty well. Both teams got their, I guess you could say, their fill. They both got their playing time, their screen time, if you will, or their, I guess, page time. But the reason for the X-Files Conspiracy, you know, Fox Mulder, Scully, they're doing their thing in DC. And the lone gunman of John, Melvin, Ringo, they're all kind of traveling around, I guess, the United States, finding out and recording and reporting on these kind of like strange phenomena. And the writing by Eric Burnham is spot on for both teams. Like, the lone gunman, they feel like the lone gunman from X-Files. They really do. And the Ghostbusters still, of course, you know Eric Burnham. He wrote the first series, second series. He wrote, you know, so much of Ghostbusters. He has the Ghostbusters down cold. So they seem, you know, solid, and they seem real. And it's fun because both of these teams are quite similar when you put them together. Like, when they're apart, you're like, oh man, X-Files doesn't have anything to do with Ghostbusters. But when you put these teams together, at least the lone gunman. Now, Scully and, you know, Fox, Scully and Fox, they're their own thing. But the lone gunman and the Ghostbusters kind of work together. And when you take writing like that and you kind of weave these two teams together, it makes them work and you end up having a lot of fun. Now, on top of that, the art is pretty fresh. It has kind of like this colored, sort of cel-shaded kind of look to it. It's unique when it comes to the art of Ghostbusters from before, and I'm not opposed to it. Now, of course, I love Dan Schoening's art. That's my like home base as far as Ghostbusters art is concerned. But I'm not mad at this. I was pretty on board with the depictions of the characters when it comes to, you know, especially from the live action to the page. I think they did a wonderful job. Now back to the story. The real deal about all this is like the lone gunmen are going here pretty much to defraud the Ghostbusters. Being like, you know, this is fake. This isn't real. This is some private sector guys and they don't know what they're doing. And this is just kind of like, you know, scaring people into believing that they really have ghosts, but it's like lasers and, you know, projections or something like that. And when they get to the firehouse, they are there to kind of just debunk everything. Of course, they meet Janine, and I believe Melvin is the one that kind of has a thing for, if you will. And they want to use the bathroom. They go upstairs and they start poking around, looking at stuff. And of course, Janine said, don't touch anything with a sticker on it. And of course, what they do, they touch something with a sticker on it. And the sticker literally says, it's like a post-it note that says, do not touch this. Like, it just straight up, do not touch. And they touch it, and it's a trap that releases a ghost. Now, before we get into all those shenanigans, let me remind you, you can find me on Black Hollywood Live. That's right, the first online network for African Americans is super dope, and you can check them out at blackhollywoodlive.com, where they have celebrity interviews, after shows, sports talk, geek nerd tech, the whole shebang bang, and live streams every day at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So now this team has this crazy ghost running all over the place. The Ghostbusters finally return from another job they're doing, and this is where you kind of start to see the teams collide and figure out, what are you doing here? you're not really, you know, reporters or whatever, and figuring out why are you touching stuff. And this really becomes an episode between, I believe, John and Egon. Egon and John really kind of like, they click very well, especially when it comes to the fact that he finds out that they, of course, are the lone gunmen. Egon's like, oh man, I used to subscribe to y'all paper, you know, everything's great, and you just see them nerd out, and it's fun because you have these guys that are first like, man, these guys are fake. They're not real. I can't trust these guys. And the next thing you know, you're like, oh, I'm your biggest fan. I always loved you. So I like that part of them finding a common ground. Of course, them finding out that ghosts are definitely real, even though they decide not to make a definitive statement when it comes to their reports. But I love how they kind of like find the common ground and end up nerding out even after being in such a life-threatening situation. I mean, the ghost was not a joke at all. Like, this wasn't like this little, it wasn't Casper. Like, this was like a Tyrannosaurus Rex-ish kind of thing with 2 mouths with a whole bunch of sharp, crazy teeth. It was bad. But after a little rough and tumble, retrapping the ghost, and some talk about time travel, everything seems to be washed up and pretty good. And that's the best thing that I can say about this episode. Is this episode, though it was a bottle episode, everything happened in the, you know, in the firehouse, this was a nice episode that gives you a break from every day, you know. And of course, last week we did Infestation. It was nice to get a break away from what we normally do, and even from Infestation, because Infestation, we still had to deal with Gozer to a certain degree. But this one, we didn't really reference, oh, well, hold up, they did reference Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. But for the most part, this is an issue where we got away from, you know, just all of the lore, all of the craziness, and just had these guys step into a role that they normally don't get to do. They kind of, you know, they dealt with a ghost, and they got rid of the ghost, but they weren't kind of tied down to, like, this world-threatening thing. They were able to just kind of relax a little bit and relate to another team that's seen some crazy stuff themselves. So, guys, if you have been reading along, holler at me. I'm going to holler at you down in the comments. Let me know what you thought about X-Files conspiracy in Ghostbusters. And we're talking about Atomic Blonde. And since I'm hoping we're all in the know here, we're all friends, let's just talk about some of my favorite parts. And I guess I'll start pretty light with Berlin. I like the way they characterize this city. It just looks grimy. It looks gritty. Of course, it's in the 80s. It's got this kind of just lived-in feel. And it doesn't to me have this kind of atmosphere of just being a bunch of sets. Like, they really went in and made it seem like, oh snap, like they're in 80s Berlin right now. Like, people look, you know, like their clothing and like the people, it just really helped establish just the characters. And I mean, it's just the character of the city, you know what I'm saying? Like, it really felt like, I mean, and not like I'm from Berlin, but it felt like I was there. If I, you know, from the TV versions of Berlin I've seen, it looks like Berlin. Now, next, I want to really talk into how the movie goes into the style, because this is where the movie shines for me. There's so much just cinematography, so much cool in this movie, from the way they do the titles with the spray paint to, you know, the way they push the lighting on and off of Charlize, or, you know, even like some of the villains, the way they shoot, like, kind of like the action through like the rear view mirror and stuff. Just like so much cool stuff in this film, the way it just comes off, just the way it looks. Like, it looks very, like, even like, say when she's coming into, you know, hotels, and when she's going up the steps, the way, the angles they choose, and just the lighting that they use when they're in the nightclubs and things of that nature, it really just pushes this like very cool feel, even though it's in a very cold and dirty place. And that's where I really have to give a lot of love to the art direction and the acting. The art direction, because just like how they were placed, how things were designed, you know, the set in general, and also just like
the titles and, you know, all of that was like extremely very, you know, well thought out and stylistic. And then the acting was just spot on. You got John Goodman, you got Charlize Theron, you got, I can't believe the other guy's name, but I'm gonna flash it up right here. And the way they create this just, I guess, vibe of double agents, undercover, you know, figuring out secrets, you know, who's lying to who. You really buy into these characters. They go a long way into, you know, giving you the idea that maybe you can't trust anybody. And they even give you characters like kind of, like Sophia Boutella's character, who they give you someone who you can kind of see in the life, and you're not really even, you know, you're not really even sure if she should be there. You can kind of see that, yo, she's not really made for this. And homegirl like just straight cuddles up with Charlize all up in the bed. And Charlize is like, yo man, I can't give away my tells. You gonna let, you know, I'm gonna get killed giving away all this. You know what I'm saying? Speaking the truth and like opening up to people. And it's a nice small relationship between them, and it helps reveal who both of their characters are. Now, before we go forward, let me remind you, you can find me at Black Hollywood Live. That's right. First online network for African Americans is super dope. And you can check them out at blackhollywoodlive.com, where they have celebrity interviews, after show, sports talk, geek nerd tech, the whole shebangabang, and live streams every day at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So when it comes to these cast of characters, I'd be remiss without naming James McAvoy. He plays the heck out of this sort of dirty agent, sort of clean agent role. Like, you really don't know what side of the fence he's on, because he does stuff that's good for Charlize, but then he also sets her up like two or three times in a row. Like, homie is definitely there for himself, but he's got the charm, and kind of like he ingratiates himself to us, the viewer, as like this guy that's like, yeah, I can't really trust him, but I like him. And you take all of that, plus some amazing action, where these action scenes are a action fan's dream. Like, you have these long shots where, you know, Charlize is just going crazy. The scene that you see in the stairway on the, you know, on the trailer is much longer, and it really, it's just, it shows how people actually would, or at least what we perceive, they would seem like in a situation like this. I mean, the characters get tired. They use any means necessary to kind of win, even to the point of just like throwing pencils and pens at each other. It's just fun seeing them just shooting and beating each other up, throwing people, falling down. Like, you see how they get worn and tired over time. And you take that with a whole bunch of sniping, you know, trying to sneak, you know, people across the border. There's just a lot to love. So all in all, I've got to give this movie straight up 4 stars. It hits everything for me. The intrigue, the way John Goodman is playing for the CIA, but then acting like he's all cool with MI6 or whatever. Like, Charlize, you know, playing the line between a double and a double and double agent. All of the action sequences that are out of this world. And then to see just the top-notch acting. Everybody's bringing it. Like, you can tell these people want to be in this film. And it's very telling, and it shows a lot when they give these crazy good performances. Now, of course, I would be remiss without telling you, this film has some length on it. I'll be honest, there's a moment in here when you're wondering like, yo, how long has this movie been going? But besides the fact that the movie does get a little long in the tooth, I was strapped in and I was very interested in what was going on. And I had a ball, man. So guys, holler at me, I'ma holler at you. Down in the comments, let me know what you thought about Atomic Blonde. It was a bunch of fights. You know, she got beat up. She wasn't like beautified the whole time, and, you know, not a cut or scar on her face. She looked like she was a true warrior. You know what I'm saying? So I had a fun time watching it. So guys, let me know your favorite parts down in the comments. You know what I'm saying? Down below. And if you haven't seen it, and maybe you watched this video anyway, hopefully you catch yourself a matinee, because I think it's definitely worth your time. Everything is cool, everyone's happy, and I've gotten a chance to sit back and watch Slight once again. And here's my five reasons that Slight needs a sequel. Now, for those uninitiated, if you didn't know, Slight is a film about a young man who ends up using technology as a way to kind of dodge or hustle people while he fuses it with the idea of magic and ends up getting caught up with some people that might be on the wrong side of the law as he tries to kind of move away from where he is. I think that's the easiest way I can say it. You know what I'm saying? He wants more for him and his younger sister. They're on their own. And in trying to get more, you get into a little more trouble. So of course, it's something that I checked out earlier this year, WWE Films, Blumhouse, a lot of fun. And I ended up coming away wondering if maybe we could get a sequel. And I haven't heard anything yet, but here are my five reasons, of course. And starting off with number five is the quality of the film. It seemed like a lot of people seemed to like it because the reactions on Rotten Tomatoes were 72, Metacritic, which is a little bit tougher, is 62, but overall a positive vibe towards this film. Most of the people that I've talked to that saw it said they enjoyed it, they liked it. It was a nice little small film, something that was in the superhero genre, sort of, but kind of closer to home, if you will. And it seems from reading all of the responses, people are pretty open to this kind of, I guess you could say, world or atmosphere that they put you into in Slight. So with that said, it looks like people in general are into it. Which brings me to my number four, which is of course the reception at the box office, that is. It cost $250,000 to make Slight. And Slight ended up coming in around, I believe, like around $3 million or something in that case. And I know probably a lot of you might be like, you know, $3 million is not a lot of money, but it made 15 times its production budget at the box office. And that's nothing to disregard if you were me. Like, if I give you a dollar and you come back with 15, I'm gonna give you another job. And that's, I think, what should happen here. This thing really turned around and made a good amount of money, especially in limited theaters. So I'm thinking maybe if we double the budget, we can at least still come back with an ill profit and it'll be good business and good for the fans. So that leads me to number three, is that due to the quality, the reception, and people's reviews, this is just straight up good business. You got a movie that people were pretty positive on. You know, 72 is nothing to shake your stick at, especially these days where, you know, people just generally like to dislike things. And when you have something that turned over 15 times its production budget, it's just smart business, man. It doesn't take a calculator to figure that one out. So that one pretty much kind of sells itself, which leads me to my number two. And that's the longevity that I think that this property could have. All of the actors, for the most part, that are, I guess, our core story, you know, members, are young in age. So it's not like, you know, these people are like, you know, 70, 80, something like that, where they might not be able to pull off fight scenes or tussle around a little bit. These guys are young. Jacob Lattimore's young. His younger sister, of course, is young. And the young lady who is our leading lady in this film is also fresh, you know, spring chicken. So all these characters are able to kind of do maybe two or three movies, depending on which way you want to take this story. So this is kind of like a property where the people have already started young and you're able to maybe plan two more movies, maybe three more movies, maybe go into a television series or something. Like, you know, the possibilities are endless because you have time on your side, which of course, and that this is my very last thing leading into number one, the possibilities. Of course, you have TV, you have film, you have animated series. The possibilities are endless, not only for the medium, but also for the story. And the story, before I get into kind of all of that good spoilery type stuff, let me remind you that you can find me at Black Hollywood Live. That's right, the first online network for African Americans, super dope. And you can check them out at blackhollywoodlive.com, where they have celebrity interviews, after show, sports talk, geek nerd tech, the whole shebangabang. at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So I'm pretty sure you guys already have your own idea. Holler at me, I'ma holler at you down in them comments. Let me know what you think they could do next. For me, what I think they could do next is show Slight, or show, of course, our young character in a different light, not fighting against, say, a gangster or something like that, but see him start to do more, I guess, on the magic side, or his, you know, sleight of hand, if you will, and also show him helping people, using his technique to maybe help people on the low end, on the street level, in a Spider-Man type sense. Now, of course, he's not slinging, web slinging through the, you know, through the city, but I would like to see him, of course, use it as a dodge or a hustle like he did before, you know, kind of like, you know, making money from here to there because you need that cheese. But just because you're getting that money don't mean you can't help people either. You know, you can get money, you know, doing your magic, and you can, you know, help people out from time to time using your electromagnetic powers. I'd also like to see those powers progress and also kind of diversify. At this time, you know, we know he has like one of the batteries in his arm, or one of the, I don't know, cathodes in his arm, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? But I would like to see maybe him have two in both, you know, shoulder blades or something like that. That would be real cool to be able to use both hands and maybe play with electromagnets or whatever, or magnetivity or electricity, whatever it is. All those words I made up, you could play with that and more. I'd like to see him maybe generate like force fields and other cool stuff that you can do when you have the larger power bank, and maybe tying it into his body even further, or maybe see how that is dope but also detrimental to his body. So of course we'll see how they do, because when it comes to this character, I think there's a lot of room for expansion. So guys, holler at me down in the comments below, and I gotta bounce and tell you to hit up thatnerdsoul.com. That's right, check me out right there, all my videos from the oldest, newest, latest, greatest, and all that. Then hit up shop.thatnerdsoul.com and pick yourself up a t-shirt player, and don't forget to get one of for them playettes. Then come back here, like, comment, subscribe, and share that Nerd Soul. That's right, there is no better way that I can show people that you like what you are watching. And oh my lord, LA what up, VA what up, RVA you got my heart, so please be good to yourself, be good to each other, and of course remember, it's all about how far you're gonna go to prove the magic is real. Peace.